Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ansklet Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond, a podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. Nelson Mandela once said, "Do not judge me by my success. Judge me by how many times I fell down and got back up again." It's this sentiment that's at the root of grit. In 2015, the World Economic Forum published a report entitled New Vision for Education, outlining the literacies, competencies, and character qualities that students require for the 21st century. The character qualities include curiosity, adaptability, leadership, and persistence and grit. Among other things, the report outlines strategies to help students develop each one. To foster grit and persistence, opportunities need to be built into lessons so that students can learn from failure. But what exactly is grit? In a research paper from 2007 presented by Duckworth, Peterson, Matthews and Kelly, grit is defined as the tendency to sustain interest in and effort toward very long-term goals. Angela Lee Duckworth, professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, has devoted most of her academic career to the study of grit. Her fascination with it began when she was teaching maths in public schools in New York and realized that IQ wasn't the sole determining factor in whether students did well or not. In her 2013 TED Talk entitled Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance, Duckworth describes it as being passion and perseverance for very long-term goals. Grit is having stamina. Grit is sticking with your future, day in, day out, not just for the week, not just for the month, but for years, and working really hard to make that future a reality. Grit is living life like it's a marathon, not a sprint. Thus, grit is about having deep commitments that you remain loyal to over many years. It's about perseverance, and also about having resilience in the face of failure. According to the American Psychological Association, psychologists define resilience as the process of adapting well in the face of adversity, trauma, tragedy, threats, or significant sources of stress. Setbacks and difficult circumstances make us feel helpless and out of control. People who are resilient will try to find the small part of a situation that they can control and will be prepared to try out new approaches to find out what will help them get through it. So resilience not only means that people are able to recover or bounce back from such setbacks, but it can also result in deep personal growth. Resilience is an important element of grit, as it means that people will be prepared to continue to look for ways to grow. So what sets people apart who have a lot of grit? Duckworth's research has shown that there are four psychological assets that gritty people possess. What's more, these assets generally develop over time and in a certain order. They are interest, the capacity to practice, purpose, and hope. In her book Grit, she explains that interest is about intrinsically enjoying, loving what you do. While there are also aspects of their work that gritty people don't particularly enjoy, they see their work as the sum of many parts and overall find it fascinating and meaningful. The capacity to practice is about trying to improve on a daily basis, trying to do things better than the day before. This kind of practice is deliberate and focused, and you have to be prepared to target your weaknesses. People who have a lot of grit resist complacency and are driven by their desire to improve. The third asset, purpose, is what cultivates passion, the belief that the work you're doing matters, not only to yourself, but also to others. It's key as it enables people to follow their passions over a longer period of time. And the fourth asset is hope. Hope underlies every stage of grit. Hope is what keeps us going in the face of adversity when we have doubts. And we will all face setbacks at different points in our lives, but hope is what keeps us getting up again and not giving up. And by getting up and persevering, we're displaying grit. Interestingly, Duckworth says that these four assets are not ones that we're either born with or not. On the contrary, she says, you can learn to discover, develop, and deepen your interests. You can acquire the habit of discipline. You can cultivate a sense of purpose and meaning. And you can teach yourself to hope. You can grow your grit from the inside out. But if we want to develop grit, we also need to cultivate a growth mindset. What is a growth mindset? Carol Dweck, professor of psychology at Stanford University, has conducted pioneering research in the field of motivation over the past decades. In her 2006 book, Mindset: The New Psychology of Success, she discusses its power. She distinguishes between two types, a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. A fixed mindset is the belief that people are born with certain innate talents and characteristics that cannot be altered by experience. If people have a fixed mindset, they're more likely to focus on doing familiar tasks well. They won't seek out challenge. They'll give up easily, be less resilient when setbacks occur, and will feel threatened by the success of others. A growth mindset, on the other hand, is the belief that a person's ability and intelligence are malleable and can be developed over time. A person with a growth mindset tends to put more energy into learning, embraces challenges, persists in the face of setbacks, learns from criticism, and importantly, finds lessons and inspiration in the success of others. Research by Dweck and Yeager in 2019 showed that students who have a growth mindset are more likely to be resilient and innovative as regards their learning strategies and have high levels of motivation. In an article for the Harvard Business Review in 2016, Dweck describes three common misconceptions people have. The first one is that people believe that they have a growth mindset and have always had one. The problem is, however, that they think it means being flexible, positive, or open-minded, and these are qualities that they've always had. According to Dweck and her colleagues, this is actually a false growth mindset. She argues that everyone displays a mixture of fixed and growth mindsets. So, for instance, we might have one in a particular area of our lives, but not in another, but that this continually evolves as we gain experience. The second misconception is that a growth mindset is just about praise and rewarding effort. As she points out, this is neither true in an educational nor in a business setting, as outcomes and results are also important. This is why it's key to not only reward effort, but also learning and progress. The processes that lead to these are also key. So asking others for help, trying out new strategies, and not getting bogged down by setbacks. And thirdly, if we just advocate developing a growth mindset, this will be enough. The problem is that this just pays lip service to the idea. Instead, an organization needs to put concrete policies into place to help people and to reinforce growth mindset values. She explains that those organizations that embody a growth mindset encourage appropriate risk-taking in the knowledge that not everything will work out as intended. So, they reward their employees for learning key lessons, even if the original goals are not met. These types of organizations support collaboration rather than competition among members of their teams and are interested in the growth of every single person. And of course, this also applies in an educational setting. In an article for the Times Educational Supplement from April 2020, Dweck warns that the concept of mindset cannot simply be presented to students with the expectation that they'll be able to act on it of their own volition. It requires the implementation of practices that foster growth and learning, as well as the creation of an environment where students are not afraid of making mistakes, where they're encouraged to try and receive constructive feedback from people who believe in them. She gives an interesting example in her 2014 TEDx talk, The Power of Believing That You Can Improve. She talks about a school in Chicago where students needed to pass different courses to graduate. If they didn't pass a particular course, instead of getting a fail grade, they were given the grade not yet. This meant that students no longer felt that they were powerless or were a failure. It showed them that they were on a learning curve and provided a way into the future. Thus, the words yet or not yet gave students greater confidence and also resulted in greater perseverance. What are some takeaways for the classroom? Well, according to Duckworth, grit can probably be taught. She says, kids may have the wrong beliefs and have misunderstandings about skill development, beliefs that stand in the way of tapping into performance traits. She points out that when students struggle with a task, they may think that they lack the ability to complete it and give up. So it's key for students to understand that when they're learning something new, it's all right to feel confused. It's even to be expected. It's therefore important to teach them that making mistakes is an integral part of learning, that having to practice things again and again can be boring, that taking a long time to complete a task is also part of learning and isn't a sign of failure. Additionally, we need to address the challenge level. Carol Ann Tomlinson discusses this issue in her book, The Differentiated Classroom. Research has shown that individuals learn best when they're in a context that provides a moderate challenge. If a task is too difficult, the learner feels threatened and will downshift and move into self-protection mode. They won't persist with thinking or trying to solve the problem. On the other hand, if the task is too easy, the learner moves into relaxation mode, which is also detrimental to thinking and problem solving. In both cases, the learner will lose their motivation to learn. However, when a task is appropriately challenging, the learner will grow in their learning. Tomlinson describes a task as being appropriately challenging when it asks learners to risk a leap into the unknown, but they know enough to get started and have additional support for reaching a new level of understanding. In an interview published on the Quartz at Work website in March 2018, Duckworth discusses two strategies for building grit in a workplace setting, both of which also apply to the classroom. The first one is the importance of small wins, so little experiences that build confidence and show you that you're on the right track. She explains that if you're trying to motivate someone, you can't just talk them into feeling confident. If they're continually encountering failure or difficulties, it's important to try to find out how to enable this person to have a small win. This might be by breaking goals down into smaller parts and then giving the person a part that they're almost able to do, but one that they can actually achieve with support. She also cites the importance of giving actionable and specific feedback. Interestingly, she and her team always give each other two pieces of feedback after completing a task. One is positive, the other critical. They refer to the critical feedback as an NTT, or next time try, so focusing on what would be better the next time. But notably, this critical feedback is actionable and framed constructively. The positive feedback is called an IWEW, or it was effective when. She says that the effectiveness of the NTTs and IWEWs can be increased by making them action-based, thus using verbs and being specific. The more specific, the better. She talks about how important it is for managers to use techniques such as these and gives an example of what a manager might say to an employee. It was really great that you wrote that memo. I liked that it had a really strong executive summary and it was spell-checked. Awesome job. As she goes on to point out, this underlines the small win. Crucially, it can then be followed up by a question such as, "So what's the next challenge?" And of course, this also applies in the classroom. After giving a presentation, an NTT might be, "You should try speaking more slowly," or "You should have more eye contact with the audience." The IWEWs are also a good idea for peer feedback, as students can be encouraged to be supportive of one another. They might say, for instance, "It was really effective when you showed the visuals supporting the argument." This is similar to an idea voiced by Ron Berger, a teacher at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. In an article for The Atlantic in March 2021, he writes, "As a teacher, I took inspiration from the way children succeed in non-academic settings, such as in sports and drama. Kids on a soccer team or in the cast of a play are always considering their own strengths and weaknesses. They receive constant feedback from peers and their coaches or directors about how to notice opportunities for passes or how to use their body on stage. They don't leave practice with a grade of a C or a D, but they do leave the specific knowledge about what they need to do better. They're motivated to improve because they're not just collaborating with others in exercises and practices. They're preparing to perform in front of their friends and family." He goes on to explain how, as a public school teacher in rural Massachusetts, he introduced a collaborative form of assessment with his sixth graders. He encouraged them to record and reflect on their academic growth with other people. To this end, each of them presented a portfolio of their work to their families and guest teachers, which culminated in them giving a formal presentation to teachers and members of the community later in the school year. Each portfolio not only contained test scores, grades, and written work, but also examples of what the students thought was their best work across all subjects, as well as an assessment of how they thought they were doing. The students also talked about their strengths, challenges, and goals, not only related to academic work, but also to their character. And Burgess saw that when students were encouraged to collaborate in this process, so felt ownership of their academic success, they asked for feedback and knew what they needed to work on as they were committed to improving their skills. This idea is one that many schools now embrace. So not only giving students marks for tests or their oral contributions and thus rewarding academic achievement, but also having a system that rewards students for achieving a personal goal, maybe for helping others to gain a better understanding of part of a topic, for persevering and improving in a certain area. In today's world, students will need grit alongside other character traits if they want to succeed, and it should be fostered early on. To do so, we need to find a way to reframe the narrative, the story students tell themselves. Rather than concentrating on "I can't" or "I'm not good at," we need to motivate students to keep on trying, so to build on the idea of "not yet." In the words of Angela Duckworth, "To be gritty is to keep putting one foot in front of the other. To be gritty is to hold fast to an interesting and purposeful goal. To be gritty is to invest day after week after year in challenging practice. To be gritty is to fall down 7 times and rise 8. And we should also get students to heed the advice of the basketball player Michael Jordan. Don't be afraid to fail. Be afraid not to try. Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The 4 C's and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.